Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Football at 4. Here's The Drive with Tyler Columbus and D-Mac.
We just had Dan Orlovsky on, and it was interesting. And we're going to get to Gus Bradley's defense here in a second, Tyler. But when he said, I wrote down, never a dull moment. Meaning, if there's a second to be doing something, you should be doing something.
Yep.
I've seen a lot of Broncos practices over the years. A lot. I got to admit, I never see a moment where when the quarterbacks aren't working on something over the years. They're always doing something.
Sure.
And I understand what Dan was saying, like maybe that's a flaw, like they're not working on something. Tyler, you've been there. I've watched a ton of practices. I think the quarterbacks are one of the most consistent groups in terms of always doing something during a practice.
Yeah, quarterbacks have always got something going on. I mean, there's a lot of periods where they're involved and they're not really doing anything. You know, like they'll send the backup quarterback over to do 9-on-7 or do team run, and they're really just there to take a handoff or hand the ball off. But, yeah, I mean, for the most part, I mean, when they go to special teams, they're over there working. I mean, honestly, I'm not just patting ourselves on the back, but offensive linemen are the same way.
They are.
Never get a period off.
There's
ever.
Always something going on.
Yeah, I mean,
I feel so
QBs.
Bad for you guys,
right?
Because it's always basically running into each other in some way.
Sitting there
way.
During special teams period, and there's like 90% of the team is just standing around for the next 12 minutes, and we're like going through it in an extra individual period, and we're like, come on, man, like put me on special teams. I can stand around for 12 minutes.
During special teams, because Bradley Chubb is not involved in any special teams at all.
Yeah.
After stretch.
Take a knee.
Well, he could. He literally just stands there.
Yeah.
They do all the stretching and warm-up, and Bradley Chubb will literally just stand there for 15 minutes until it's time for his
position. That's what most guys do. That's what the majority of guys are doing.
Well, a lot of guys are involved with special teams one way or the other, but not Bradley Chubb.
But even if you're on special teams, I mean, you're rotating in and out. You're just standing there. It's a period off.
I guess my point is, I don't think part of the problem is that they're wasting time.
But I think what he was talking about was really deeper than just practice time. I think what he's saying is, man, you better be in that film room. You better be the first to arrive. You better be the last to leave. You know, on Saturday nights when you've got that 7 o'clock meeting, he's exactly right. You know, that meeting starts at 6 o'clock for you, and take advantage of every last waking moment that you have, because that's what quarterbacks do. And especially when you're a young guy, man. I mean, Peyton Manning did it all the way through. And if a guy like Peyton Manning can do it all the way through year 14, 15, whatever, however many he played, certainly as a young kid, you could be doing it.
Well, to be fair, I have never, ever, ever heard that Drew Lock is not doing everything he should be doing, like we heard about Paxton Lynch.
Yeah, me either.
Could he be doing more? Maybe. I don't even know that. But I've never heard, like, he's not putting as much time in as he should.
No,
I've never heard it.
Yeah, I would agree. I haven't heard any of that either.
Okay, Gus Bradley's defense. What are you looking at? What are you seeing with the Chargers defense and Gus Bradley's defense?
Well, Gus Bradley is a typical Seattle Seahawks defense. He is he's a little bit on the plain side. He does not want to blitz all too often. He runs a basic cover three. That's what he does all day long. He'll run an under front out of a four down look, and the majority of the time he's going to be in a cover three defense, which, look, this is a good opportunity for Drew Lock, because he's got to stop taking the home run ball, and he's got to start identifying the defense. Well, Gus will change it up, and this year he's been changing it up more than usual. He'll do a little bit of two high. He'll do a little bit of man coverage with single high safety. But like I said, majority of the time it's going to be cover three. Now, what is cover three? Cover three is a defense that is great for Drew Lock this week, because Drew Lock needs to start taking the safe routes. He needs to start taking the profit. He needs to just start moving the down and distance and keeping that manageable, right? Stop going for the home run ball. When you go up against cover three defense, it's a middle third defense, right? So your safety's got the middle third. The two corners have got the two deep thirds, so you've got three high, and then what happens is you've got kind of two areas where you can try to attack a cover three defense. If you're going for the home run ball, you've got the two seams right in between the thirds, right? So you can try to attack in between the corner and in between the safety. However, the majority of the time, what ends up opening up a lot is you've got the two flats that underneath, and those are there quickly, and they're there all the time because those corners that are pressed up on man coverage on those wide receivers, they got to bail. They got to get to the deep third, right? And then you've got a linebacker who's trying to get over to that flat area, and it takes time for him to get there. So the checkdowns, the underneath routes, they should be there all day long this week. And, Drew, it should be a great opportunity for him to just start playing with some tempo, playing with some timing, take the short underneath routes, take those flats, attack it, and then when you want to go deep, you try to attack the two seams.
Okay. So this is good.
Yeah, I think it's a good opportunity for Drew.
The weather's going to be good. It's a good defense for him to go against. He's going to shake out the bad habits to whatever degree he can. He's not going to dive bomb balls into the dirt when his receivers are thrown against air. I think things are lining up in a very positive way. I love that analysis right there. Are you feeling optimistic about things when you think about the defense he's going to be playing against?
Well, I think it's a good thing because it will force him to take what he needs to be taking anyways.
Okay.
That's what this defense naturally gives you. It gives you the underneath routes. It gives you the flats.
What's the danger? What's the danger of this defense?
Well, it's tough to get over the top on them, and then they can catch you off guard if you're not properly reading the zones, and if a guy transfers through and you don't read the correct guy, well, they might get a couple picks here and there. But like I said, there's not a whole lot of disguise. They're not trying to blitz you. They're not trying to get after you. Now, they probably will with Drew. They'll probably blitz more than they normally do. But generally speaking, it's a good opportunity. Like I said, man, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. I'm not overly optimistic to the degree. I mean, Drew's got to earn it, and he's got to prove it to me. At this point, the Broncos, they got to prove to me that they're capable of winning games. So it's good. It's a good opportunity, and they'll give him what he needs to work on anyways.
All right, how do the teams match up against each other in the same positions? That's next.
Does your company make safety a top priority? Alliance Safety, Colorado's premier supplier of safety equipment, is here to help make it one. As an authorized distributor of 3M safety products and home to all pro gear, Alliance has a vast inventory of personal protective equipment designed to keep your workers safe, including fall protection, safety glasses, protective gloves, and gas detection solutions. Visit AllianceSafetyInc.net. Call 303-388-8766 or stop by the Alliance Safety Warehouse off I-70 and Tower today to lock up all your safety needs.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac.
I'll kill you with truth coming up in about 15 minutes. You're going to love it. It's awesome. Very inspirational. Troy Rank with a live report from what was happening out there in Broncos land. Beautiful day. Absolutely gorgeous. And when we think of the Chargers, Tyler, let's put them up against each other. Let's go position by position. Who's got the better guy? Bradley Chubb against Joey Bosa. Tell me about Bradley Chubb and Joey Bosa.
Oh, well, Joey Bosa is as good as they come, man. I mean, I've been watching the film on this guy, and he's got 4.5 sacks on the year, but that doesn't even remotely give justice to the amount of damage that he's doing right now. I mean, he has got every single offensive tackle just swimming, man. I mean, they're holding on for dear life when they go up against him. He's got him in the quarterback's lap. He's making pressure. He is getting some sacks in the running game. He's been an absolute monster. I mean, Bradley Chubb is doing his deal as well here of late. So, you know, I think they are in the same ballpark, but Bosa is definitely a better football player.
No kidding. Their numbers are practically identical. 16 tackles for Bosa, 17 for Chubb. 4.5 sacks for both. 7 tackles for a loss for Bosa, 6 for Chubb. Both with 11 quarterback hits. We are looking at two dudes who are having a very, on the field at least, similar season.
Yeah, and listen, of late here, Bradley Chubb is playing as good a football as anybody in the league. I guess my only hesitation when I say that there's definitely a clear separation for me is that I don't ever see Bosa getting handled. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is in control 98% of the time.
And you see that with Chubb.
And I do see Chubb. You know, he will go through little spells where he's just kind of getting handled. And you're like, wow, where are you? What are you doing there? Bradley Chubb is a very streaky guy. Joey Bosa, to me, is 100% on.
100%. Running backs. Now, this is different because our guy, Austin Eckler, unfortunately, is hurt. We love Austin, local kid. Go Western. but they have Joshua Kelly and Justin Jackson. I don't know anything about these dudes against Philip Lindsay and Melvin Gordon. What do you like?
Well, our group is a better group right now without Austin Ekeler out there. I mean, if Austin Ekeler was playing, I might have to think a little bit longer and a little bit harder about it. But Philip Lindsay is as good as they come. And Melvin Gordon, in the right situation, if you utilize him properly, man, he could be one heck of an advantage for us as well. They've got backups that are playing right now. Kelly's the team's fourth-round pick. He's got enough explosiveness that will make you want to pay attention, but I'm not terrified of their running game by any means.
That's not their thing.
No, it's Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert's their deal. And Justin's doing a good job in the running game as well, both with called runs and just scrambling around and picking up 12 or 13 yards here and there when the opportunity presents itself. We've got the better running game for sure.
Jerry Jeudy against Keenan Allen. This feels a little unfair, so let's keep it in relative terms. What do you see out of both these guys if you mash them up together?
Well, I got a lot of hope for Jerry Jeudy, and I do expect him at some point to have a breakout game. I don't know why it hasn't come yet, and I do think that is curious. I don't know if there's just maybe there might be something with him and Drew Locke. Drew Locke just hasn't quite bonded with him. He doesn't quite believe in him. He's not looking for him. You know, quarterback's got to trust you, and he's got to know that he's your guy. And quarterbacks, for sure, they've got favorite guys to throw the ball to. As of right now, Jerry Jeudy's not that guy. Keenan Allen, I mean, you can't find very many guys in the NFL that are playing better football than Keenan Allen. Yeah. He is just, he's got the size, he's got the speed, he's got the route running, he's got the ability to just catch it over your head, he's got the ability to separate from you. I mean, Keenan Allen is top-tier wide receiver.
Plus, he has the obvious, he has the total trust of Justin Herbert. The ball's going to come his way.
For sure, for sure.
How we match up defensively against Keenan Allen?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, we don't necessarily run a defense where we're going to match up guys one-on-one all game long because we're not a man coverage team. We're a zone coverage team. But, I mean, if we are in man, I mean, you definitely want to have A.J. Boye on him. He's the body type that wants to compete against them. Last week I said that if we are in man, you wanted Bryce Callahan to be on Tyreek Hill. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not really the type of defense that we run where you're just going to run man coverage and let them trail the guys all over the place. But A.J. Boye would give your most competitive chance against Keenan Allen because you need a taller, more physical guy that could go compete with him.
It does feel like Jerry Jeudy's is – at some point, he's going to have some sort of breakout game.
You know,
just feels like it's just due.
The only reason why I don't totally jump on that with you is because the quarterback's got to be committed to the guy for that to happen.
Why wouldn't Drew Locke be committed to him?
I just have not seen a single game where Drew Locke, where it's felt like they are intentionally trying to get Jerry Jeudy involved. You know, when I saw Jerry Jeudy pick up that, well, it was probably a 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7, something like that last week where we threw it over to the left side. We threw it short of the sticks, and Jerry Jeudy had to make a move to pick up the first down, and he did. And I'm like, you know what? Why aren't we intentionally feeding this guy on some underneath routes? Just let him make some noise with his feet. Let him pick up some first downs with us. But we're not. So I don't know if he is going to have that breakout game because I just have not felt the commitment either from Pat Shurmur to get him involved or from Drew Locke.
Well, no time like Sunday to get it going. You got him. Why not? And that's a big part of why I'll kill you with truth next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac.
I'm just an old truth teller.
Time for D-Mac to kill you with truth.
I want the truth!
Yeah, the truth.
And the truth shall set you free!
Here on The Drive.
This is the most important football game Drew Locke has ever played on Sunday. And that's the truth. There's no more excuses. I could give you excuses for the Chiefs. I could give you excuses from coming back from injury. I can give you excuses for being young. A lot of excuses for all those things. I can give you excuses for learning a new system. We can give you excuses for time. Those excuse times are done on Sunday when you have everything to your advantage. A defense that Tyler just did a great job laying out why you should be able to be productive against. The talent in terms of the receivers and tight ends. An offensive line? At least the nerds at Pro Football Focus think Garrett Bowles is the best left tackle. You're going to have two healthy running backs for hopefully the first time. We knock on wood, and hopefully Philip Lindsay's healthy. There just are no other excuses here. The weather's going to be fine. And it's a team that, listen, the Chiefs are the Chiefs. Nobody expects you to really be keeping up with the Chiefs right now, hopefully down the line. But you should be able to keep up with the Chargers at home. And then after that, we're going with the Falcons, the Raiders, the Dolphins. All right, come on. The truth is, this game really matters to me in the evaluation of Drew Luck. We absolutely need to see improvement from last week. We need to see him correcting things. And we need to see him being incredibly productive. And if he can't do that this Sunday, the truth is, the rest of the evaluation, I'm not going to say it's over, but the rest of the evaluation the rest of the year is going to be harsh. The truth is, the Broncos should win. I'm being hopeful they will win. And you got to look like you're one of these guys. And right now, he doesn't. But this Sunday will go a long way to proving that Drew Lock should be in the same conversation with Justin Herbert. And that's the truth.
I like it. I like it. I mean, you know, there's no doubt. I mean, there are no more excuses. You're coming up into a little bit of a soft spot in your schedule, and this is when you need to make some noise. You need to go toe-for-toe with Justin Herbert. You guys are both young quarterbacks. You're supposed to be the franchise quarterback, Drew Lock. We know that Justin Herbert is the franchise quarterback. Well, go toe-to-toe with him, and it's time to play some good football. I mean, I would agree with everything that you said, except for that I would expect them to win. I don't expect them to win because I think the Chargers are the better football team. But, yeah, you're right on the rest of it, man. I mean, this is – you can excuse losing to the Chiefs. You can excuse getting blown out by the Chiefs. You got a decent win against the Patriots. We now know that it was not the win that some people thought it was at the time, but it was still a good win. And you got to find a way to win some games now in a soft part of your schedule. Number one, to give some hope for the season, but number two, just to kind of recapture that magic that you had going on last season.
That is what feels missing right now when young quarterbacks are being discussed and how good they're doing. You just do not hear Drew's name thrown in there.
Yeah, that's the disappointing part, right? Because when the season ended last year, there was so much hype, man. And in the offseason, the hype train for Drew Lock, it got so loud that I'm sitting here telling everybody, whoa. Slow down. Like, slow. It's funny the way that the narrative that I've been painted under here lately, because when the season began, it was, oh, Tyler's the Drew Lock hater, because I was telling everybody to slow down on this hype train that's going on. Well, I was realistic. And now all of a sudden I'm the Drew Lock apologist, because I'm telling everybody, give him some time. We still got time to figure this out, and there's still plenty of time to look into it. The reality is, he's exactly where I thought he was in the offseason, and he's got plenty where he needs to improve. And this is the stretch where you can get it done. This is the stretch where you can make some noise.
Here's what I definitely want to see. The throws that are easy, the baby throws, as Drew Lock says, yeah, you got to hit them all.
Sure.
Okay. Then when it comes to recognizing the defense and decision-making, more times than not, way more times than not, I need to see Drew Lock make the right decision.
Yep. No more turnovers. No, like none. Like zero.
This is what's scary. If you can't make the baby throws and you're not recognizing things you should recognize, dude, if you can't do that stuff, then we're going to...
Simmer down.
I'm telling
you.
You're going to get into that territory.
No, you will. You will not get in that territory no matter what.
I'll tell you the two things that Brett Rippey...
I'll tell you some truth right now. It does not matter what Drew Lock does the rest of the season. At no point should you bail on him. None. I don't care what happens. This season is Drew Lock's season. Brett Rippey is not going to ever be your guy, so do not do anything stupid.
Why are you... All right. I essentially agree with you, but why are you so angry about that?
Because to me, that's insane. You want to talk about putting yourself in purgatory. Okay, take away from Drew Lock, who could potentially be your guy, and go into purgatory for a half a season and a season in which the season's already lost. What would be the point of that?
Well, I agree with you. It'd be terrible. But
Don't you start that hype train again.
Look, listen to what I said. Baby throws and recognizing things.
Sure.
That's it. Because those are two things I know Brett Rypien can do.
Tell me I'm wrong. Don't let our show be that dumb show. Don't let our show be the dumb show that is saying that Brett Rypien might be a better option than Drew Lock.
There's a big if there. And it's, like I said, the baby throws and recognizing things. I expect Drew Lock to be able to do the easy stuff.
Yeah.
And then the more difficult stuff. Whatever. There's got to be something that separates quarterbacks on your team. By the way, like the Patriots, they are, this close to not only probably benching Cam Newton, but cutting Cam Newton. Julian Edelman is out because he's having some sort of surgery that I guarantee you, if they were doing well, he wouldn't be having. There's a rumor I saw today. It's a fire sale in New England right now. Their season's done. They're putting it out there. If you want anybody on our team, let us know. All right. They've already, so if they're kind of anticipating Cam Newton already having a bad. They're moving on. The first two good games, they're done.
Yeah, well, that doesn't have anything to do with Drew Lock. You're right. That they will be done. But Cam Newton was holding on for like his third life. I mean, way different situation. We're talking about developing a young kid rather than a guy that is done. Don't compare Cam Newton to Drew Lock.
I'm just saying, when you're when you're a better quarterback, you should always be a better quarterback, and there should be no debate about it whatsoever. So I understand how you're misreading, and probably a lot of people are misreading what I'm saying, is that the separation between the starter and whoever is behind him, take Brett Rypien out of it, the separation between those two guys has got to be stark. It should be stark. There should be a huge difference between those two guys.
Yeah, there should, and let's hope by the time this season is all said and done, it's not even close. If there's not a separation, well, we're looking for a starting quarterback. It's not going to be Brett Rypien, but we will be looking for a starting quarterback.
That's better said. I just like to, Let it rip, let it fly. That's just kind of fun.
I just can't let us be that dumb show.
Troy Rank, he'll join that dumb show coming up next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Here's Tyler Palumbis and D-Mac.
Hit me like a bomb. Imagine Troy Rank sitting there at that Def Leppard concert at McNichols.
Actually,
Troy might have seen him at the Pueblo State Fairgrounds. What do you want to? All right, where do you think Troy saw Def Leppard for the first time? Pueblo or Denver?
Did Def Leppard go to Pueblo? I'm
going
to say Denver.
They probably went to
Def Leppard went to Pueblo.
They probably went to Pueblo a little deeper in the dip of their career.
I don't think so.
I'm going to say it was at McNichols Arena. Troy, where were you when you saw Def Leppard for the first time?
Yeah, that would have been on USA Network Night Flight. I never saw Def Leppard. I saw Motley Crue in concert. I saw U2 three times, I think. I wasn't a big concert guy. I had a friend in a thrash metal band, Expatriate, that I saw play at a couple of record stores where we did mosh pits. But I wasn't a Def Leppard guy. I like Motley Crue, and I like Metallica. I wish that's the one band I wish I had seen in concert.
I've seen Metallica like 9 times.
I heard their show in... Did you see their show at Super Bowl 50 at AT&T Park, D-Mac?
No. Was that that Super Bowl week? I didn't see it. No.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
That was like an all-time show. So anyway, I did not see Def Leppard. So I did see a couple of cheesy metal bands.
By the way, when a really high-level successful band does end up playing at the Pueblo State Fairgrounds, there's a certain dip in the career.
It's probably time to hang it up.
Not hang it up, but, Troy, when, What's the most interesting band? I know you. Maybe it's nothing, but what's the most interesting band you saw at the Pueblo State Fairgrounds?
Yeah, again, I wasn't a band guy at the state fair. But
you never went, ever? Like in high school, you didn't take a girl to like the state fair to see a band?
It's just one of those things, when you live there, you don't go to the fair. It's hard to explain. Like, it's,
what do you mean?
It's like a tourist attraction.
Well, duh,
so
but
you
what
go
else?
As a kid, you go as a kid to get funnel cakes and go on the rides, but once you get to high school, I can't remember going to the state fair in high school.
Really?
I honestly can't.
Again, because
you live there.
And not everybody
so
lived your
like,
life, D-Mac.
Well,
not
I'm
everybody
just saying,
lived the same life.
Troy's in Pueblo. There's not that much going on. I just figure you go to the fair once a year at some point. It goes for like 10 days.
Yeah, we went and partied at the tunnels behind the high school by the railroad tracks. We had our own thing going on.
Yeah, that's where all the cool kids were.
Of course, people do die at the fair.
Die at the fair.
Yeah. All right, Troy Rank brought to you by
ROX Rocks Heating and Air.
What'd you see out there today, Troy?
Well, there's good news with Philip Lindsay that he was doing drills. They actually updated their participation sheet, an injury report to show him as limited. He is continuing to clear steps in the concussion protocol. The fact that he's on the field is great news and that they should be able to clear him. He's certainly trending in the right direction to be cleared either tomorrow or Saturday. So they need him. I mean, so that's good to see him out there in terms of the one guy, if you could say and identify, that they need to win this game. I would say Lindsay, for me, might be on top of that list. Slowing Herbert is a close second, but I don't know if they can win this game if Philip Lindsay doesn't play and play well, and I expect him to play based on what I've seen this week.
Troy, Chargers did not practice today because they had a case of COVID with one of their players. Mike Munchak came down with it. D-Mac said that he noticed all the players were wearing masks out there, and I'm reading your tweets. So apparently they now are, it's mandated that they have to be wearing a shield or a mask even when they're out of practice?
Yeah, and if they take their helmet off, they have to put a mask on. It's changed. Your team's protocols change if you have a COVID test, and the NFL outlines that. Yeah, so if it's through the NFLPA. I mean, the details in it I won't bore you with, but if you have a COVID test in your organization, it changes the protocol. So that's why, like when Kareem Jackson was talking to us on Zoom today, he had the shield on, and then he put it back on at the end and said, hey, you all need to go out and get your shield and stay safe. But he said, hey, these protocols are over the top. He admitted it, but he's like, listen, they're just trying to protect us. But this all did change because of the original COVID positive test of Curtis Mockins. He's now back. Munchak, we don't know how long he's going to be out. But, yeah, it's the world they're living in, and it's different. But I give the players credit in this regard that they continue to manage it and get through it as best they can.
You know, I'm thinking of Drew Locke right now, Troy, and I'm using my baseball brain to think about things with him. And to me, it feels like he's just gripping it a little bit. You know what I mean? He's just not letting it flow. And I'm not saying he's Jose Altuve who can't get it to second base. But you see it every once in a while when a dude just hangs on to that, you know, baseball too long and you're not sure where it's going to go. I think I'm seeing a little bit of that with Drew Locke. Am I striking any chords with you?
Where I would say that I see the similarity in your argument is that he's pressing at times. And when you press, you do kind of get caught in between. Like, I want to make the big play. I want to make the, wait, I need the short play. And, you know, as a hitter, you get caught in between. And he looks like at times he's not trusting his eyes, especially against pressure. He doesn't seem to have a great plan against pressure, and he rushes. And when he does that, he had mechanical issues when he came into the league. And those 8 to 10 weeks off while he was hurt last year, he kind of fixed and cleaned up a lot of that. But this year, he's fallen into some bad habits. And it just looks like, to me, a young guy who's pressing, he wants it to happen so badly that you try to do things you really don't need to do. So I don't know, the Altuve thing, the yips are crazy. So I would never wish that on anybody because that's a mental issue. That is really not a physical issue. With Drew, he looks like a young guy who missed a couple games and wanted to come back and say, see, here we go, deep strikes. This is who we are. We're an explosive offense. And again, I keep saying, sometimes you got to take the layups and not shoot threes on the fast break. Just take what's given, get into a rhythm, get your confidence, and you know, keep your offense on the field, then build from that. It's like they keep trying to ask, he wants to be great without being good. Just take the steps, take what's in front of you, and keep moving forward. But I'm not giving up on Drew Locke. These are fixable things. and he's got 10 weeks to do it. But there are things and fundamentally he needs to fix, and Tyler's identified them at times. It's just he's got to do certain fundamental things to get back on track. And I think this week offers a good chance because the Chargers' pass defense has not been great.
I know Pat Shurmur spoke to the media today. Did anybody happen to ask him whether part of it's play calling with how aggressive Drew Lock is being, or did is it on Drew Lock just not making the right decisions?
He didn't address that specifically, nor I wouldn't expect. Pat Shurmur still talks like a head coach, so he filibusters at times, talks around stuff, talks in generalities. I mean, he's like, even when it was brought up, Drew brought up that, hey, he missed baby throws that he's completed since Pop Warner. And Pat's like, well, there's no such thing as a baby throw in the NFL, which we all know there is for guys with disability. But he just said that, Drew's got to get back to the footwork and the fundamentals and just get back to his base and trust it. And some of it is play calling. And when anytime Pat's asked about that, it kind of just goes into a direction of filibustering, frankly. But it is play calling at times. And they do need to, for me, Tyler, keep him out of harm's way. Hey, throw out a running back screen once in a while. Throw out a quick slant to Jerry Jeudy. I just think, I know with shooters you see this, and you get him some confidence, and then everything starts to flow. But it's hard for Drew to have confidence if he's 0-for-4 and then you're just dialing up long balls. Those aren't easy to complete in the NFL. But I do think Drew's going to bounce back this week. If he doesn't, it would be concerning, again, given the Chargers don't play great pass defense, and this is a kind of a chance with guys healthy to get back on track.
The tricky part of this is it's the NFL. It's not like in college where, okay, you're in Missouri, you play Alabama, ouch, we get spanked, and now we're playing Southwest Missouri Valley State, and maybe I can use this as a way to just sort of get my flow back. You don't get those moments in the NFL, Troy. So how do you get them at all? I mean, how do you snap out of it?
Well, again, trust yourself. Trust what trust your preparation. Don't try to be something you're not. And Drew, the problem he runs into is he is aggressive. He's personable. He's magnetic. Like he likes the spotlight. He wants it. But in the NFL, he's finding, like a lot of young quarterbacks before him, you've got to be careful not to skip steps in this process, unless you're just physically a freak and can do things other people can't do. And that's, that's the 1-3 percentile of guys. So I think we're going to see an offense, D-Mac, to your point, that they're going to call. I asked Vic Fangio this. Do you get involved with, in the game plan offensively to tell him things? And he said, yeah, I do. And I would assume that Vic's telling him, like, we need to get this kid in rhythm. We can't ask him to be making these deep strikes without first getting him in rhythm. And for me, it's pretty easy. Run the damn football. Get the game going on the ground to allow for play action, because that's when guys do get open in the NFL, and build off of that. Them trying to pass, I just don't think that's fair to Lock. Get going on the ground first and build off that.
Savon Miller was out there today helping coach up the guys, and he was walking around without a boot on. What's the latest on his health status?
Yeah, I mean, he's making progress. It's impossible to say he's ahead of progress, even though they said they thought the boot was going to be on until mid-next week. Until he starts, doing things where he's moving around, you don't know. But everything so far from that surgery for the dislocated ankle tendon has healed on schedule. That is at least leaving the carrot out there that he could return at the end of the season. Whether that's worth it, you brought it up, Tyler. He'd have to know he's 100% to come back, and especially if they're not in it. Is it worth the risk, or does he feel like I need to show people I can still play? I mean, there'd be a number of conversations that would have to be had, but the good news is Vaughn is in great spirits. He's out there coaching the outside linebackers with Coach Pagano. He's leading just as he promised. So those are good things to see. I saw Jarrell Casey out there doing the same thing today with the defensive linemen. So those are good things to see, and it looks like Vaughn is kind of over the initial shock of the injury and is starting to show more of his personality again, and we're seeing a little bit of that on the practice field. He's a ways away, but again, here we are, seven weeks removed from the injury, or at least 6 weeks. He's definitely in a good spot.
Real quick, the Rockies decided to not offer DJ LeMahieu any kind of deal, and now they're paying Daniel Murphy $6 million to go away. How'd that work out?
Yeah, not great. I mean, I'd hope the next team that gets Murphy hides his glove, so I would assume that's an American League team. I mean, if I never see him at first base again, I'll be happy.
Like, you know what? You know what drives me nuts about that? You don't think DJ LeMahieu could have played first base? I mean, of course he could.
I talked with LeMahieu about that. He wouldn't have played first for the Rockies. He'd do it for the Yankees because you're in it.
What do you mean he wouldn't do it? He would refuse to do it?
Why would he, as a Gold Glove second baseman, move to first on a team that's not very good?
Well, I don't know.
It makes no sense.
Does he have a choice?
He did. He had the Yankees. He had other offers.
No. Well, all right, fine. But he didn't. All right. Anyways.
I'm just saying, if he had no other choice, yeah, you play first for anybody. He had an option to say Yankees are like, you'll be a super utility guy. And not surprisingly, when they saw him at second, they're like, oh, wow, he's really good at second. Yeah, because he won Gold Gloves. And DJ doesn't want to leave New York now because he would be a great fit back for the Rockies. That's never going to happen. But New York fits him perfectly because of their short right field porch. He's an oppo guy, yeah. So his power's gone up by like 50% because he hits 320-foot fly balls to right field that go out there. Right. I just, he's a great fit there.
He is a free agent, though, right? I mean, he could...
He is a free agent.
Oh, my God. All right, thank you, Troy. We'll talk to you later.
See you, bud.
See you, Ned.
Troy Rank brought to you... Bye.
ROX, Rocks Heating and Air.
Here's the answer Fangio did to Troy's question about does he converse with Shermer about the offense?
Yeah. I mean, I ask the questions about, what are we doing? I give the things that I think what might be good. I kind of look at our offense from a defensive perspective and, give some information along those lines. We converse back and forth early in the week and he puts the plan in.
I mean, does Vic even know what's going on with the offense? I mean, what do you think he really,
Well, I mean, they're definitely two independent parties, and it's definitely Pat Shurmur's show over there on offense.
Right.
But, I'm not knocking Vic Fangio for that. There's a lot of coaches that operate like that. There's a lot of young offensive coaches that they don't know what's going on defensively, or at least I shouldn't say don't know, but they're not involved in the game planning or the play calling.
Not Vic's thing.
No. Well, he's a defensive coach, he's the defensive coordinator.
Hey, Pat, everything you'll be all right this week?
Yeah, Coach.
Oh, yeah. Vic, we got it. We got it going.
We're good. Thanks. Thanks for checking in.
Who are your head coaches?
I had Mike Shanahan, Josh McDaniels.
Offense.
I had Pete Carroll, defense.
Okay.
I had...
Kind of a manager of everything, though.
Defense.
Okay.
Definitely defense.
So Pete Carroll, you don't think he knew what was really going on with the offense?
Well, Pete was involved to the degree that he has always hired offensive coordinators that are going to be run first guys. And so he's got an overall offensive philosophy that he wants his coaches to abide by.
So he hires guys based on his philosophy.
But he's 100% defensive guy.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I had Mike again and Gary Kubiak.
Offense, yeah. Hey, you could have a defensive head coach and have a great team, no doubt about it. But I agree with you. You have to. That does seem important. You don't have to know the ins and outs of it necessarily, but you have to have a philosophy.
Yeah.
And then that's my guy for my philosophy.
I mean, really all you need to do is your only responsibility as a head coach. It's really not any different for a head coach that's an offensive guy that is giving his input on defense. When it comes down to it and it's third and long and the game's on the line, if you're an offensive guy, you just got to pipe in and say, hey, man, I want you to bring the house. And if they bring the house, then it's up to them to come up with the best call that they've got. If you're a defensive guy, when it's fourth and one and you decide to go for it, you say, hey, coach, give me your best running play. That's what I want. That's about all you'll do as far as when you're talking about the other side of the ball.
Well, let's hear from Pat Shurmur.
KKF Fix, Denver Boulder, HD2, Longmont,
Denver and stuff.
Yes.
KKFN, HD1, Longmont, Denver.
ROCK in the USA with John Cougar Mellencamp right here on The Fan. come from the cities and they come from the small towns. It's called Hit the Post there, brother. They beat up cars with the tires and drummers go. Crack, boom, bang.
Let's go. R-O-C-K-A-U-S-A. Let's go.
R-O-C-K-A-U-S-A.
Let's go. Let's go.
What a beautiful day. Thank you for listening. We're closer to the Chargers. It's a four-game stretch where everything can turn around. It's like springtime in October. Everything can begin again, Tyler, with this four-game stretch.
Sure.
Bring to you a sense of optimism, hope, and joy on this. Look outside. Come on.
It's a beautiful day, man. I love Colorado.
Just got to get Pat Shurmur together.
Don't forget to get your furnaces tuned up, though. Turn quick.
Yeah, that's true. Premier Heating there, 303-993-9060.
Let's not get into competition here. No, I mean, don't make me get into competition.
You know, you're going to bring it up.
Duckworks is the best.
I'm going to stick up for my boys at Premier. Pat Shurmur. All right, here's some Pat Shurmur. Let's take a deeper dive into our guy, Pat Shurmur, and see what's what. This is about young quarterbacks and how you need to coach and be patient.
Well, it's tough nowadays when you take a quarterback coming from college, because just look at the scores in college football and tell me, you know, when we had Sam Bradford, you know, after his first season, I asked him, I said, what's the difference between, and he had a heck of a rookie year. He put us one game from winning the division with a team that didn't win a game the year previous. Is he says, you know, the challenging thing in pro ball as opposed to college, he said, when I was in college, I just dropped back and everybody was open. And so I could just pick one out. He said, the challenging thing here is because defense is challenged so much more in pro football and the matchups are so much tougher. He said, and this was Sam, he said, the challenging thing was there was times this year when I looked up and there was nobody open. And so, you know, or they weren't open in a way they were in college. And so I think that's a little bit of a deal. So the timing and the accuracy and everything that you teach, you know, has to really pick up, you know. And I think so that, you know, the first is the understanding of that. And then secondly is going through that process so that, you know, you define it and refine it and make good throws.
All right, what do you think about that? Unpack that statement.
Well, boy, we're going all the way back to Sam Bradford now, huh? That's our analogy of the day, Sam Bradford.
Well, the first thing he said, it's tough when you have to work with those quarterbacks right out of college.
Yeah.
Meaning, boy, would I rather work with, like, you know, a veteran quarterback, you know, that's not my first choice, obviously.
Sure. Well, said every coach that's ever coached in the NFL, they would all agree with that statement.
Right.
I mean, you know, what you're seeing, and I would agree with what Pat Shurmur is saying, is that Drew Lock, he never truly was forced to get up to the line of scrimmage, identify the defense, figure out where the blitzes are coming from, properly go through his progressions before the ball's ever even snapped, because the hashes are so wide. And you go out there and you've got 3-4 wide receivers out on the field. Sometimes you got 5 of them, and you could probably throw to any 3 or 4 of them at any given time because the spacing is so wide open. You just really don't have the same struggles as you do in the NFL. Everything's so much more compact, and you know the zones are so much more smaller for the guys to have to get through, and for the defensive backs and for the linebackers to get there. They get there so much quicker. It's definitely a true statement. All at the same time, it's certainly not an excuse either. I mean, we've got a lot of young quarterbacks coming in and playing at a very high level right now.
Right. What I'm reading between the lines there is that Drew is still struggling a little bit. Recognize things and react to things because things still for him look a lot different now than they did in Missouri. Okay, to your point, you said, hey, this guy's still a rookie. Excuse me, he's still a rookie.
Sure.
And I do remember my frustration last year when they refused to activate Drew Lock for whatever reason. Remember that whole, you know, dialogue about how...
How could I forget it? You thought he couldn't play because he wasn't good at virtual reality.
No, I thought if this guy's going to develop, he has to play.
I know. You missed the point on the virtual reality conversation.
Listen, in lieu of nothing else, I like the virtual reality. I like it better than doing nothing. Well, that was my point. Like, how else are you supposed to get any good unless you're, I mean, yeah.
Oh, there was no reason at all to not have Drew Lock activated as long as you possibly could last year. If nothing else, just to have him on the practice field and get as many reps as he possibly can.
Don't forget the first reports from Kliss, the first reports, Drew was going to be activated for like the last two games of the season.
Right.
And it finally got just so ridiculous that it really was Vic Fangio, and I do believe it, who was pushing to say, no, let's go. Well, we're all scared. Oh, what's going to happen? Well, it turned out all right.
You don't think it was Elway? I mean, I would assume, if anything, that was Elway at that point.
Like, I was told it was Fangio more than anybody. I think John, to a certain degree, is fine to just, once things are set up, to just let things go how they're going to go. I don't think John does butt in that much.
I just
much
don't,
like,
I mean, shoot, if I was a GM and I drafted a young kid and things weren't going well,
right?
I would certainly want to see him out there on the field playing.
Tyler?
But maybe that's just me.
No. I totally agree with you, which is why I thought Gary Kubiak and John Elway would never talk to each other again after what happened with Paxton Lynch in that particular game.
Yeah, well.
So, but they did. They did. It wasn't, it really, truly wasn't that big of a deal.
Right.
Which stunned me because it was such an insult. Anyways, we're not going to go through that. But maybe Drew, I'm given some benefits of the doubt here. He really is, if he's still a rookie, hasn't had the reps to just see everything and react to everything. And it's just taken a little bit longer for things to click in than some of these other guys who were regarded higher than him coming out of college.
Well, look, you just got to take the good and you got to take the bad with Drew Lock, and you got to acknowledge where we are. And when you got into the offseason, you should have been doing the exact same thing that I did and say, yeah, we played five games and he won. I got it. It was fun. But the reality was he played like one half of really good football, and we had not seen anything going into the offseason to put a crown on this young man's head. We need to see this guy play some good football. Now, he has played some good football, and he's done a lot of things well. And he's brought some excitement to this town, and he's brought some moxie. He's brought a sense of stability where you just know, like, when he walks on the field, there's no doubt in your mind that those guys, they can gravitate towards Drew Lock, and that says something, right? But at the same time, he has not gone through the progressions the way you want him to, and he's only eight games into his career. Now, is that an excuse? No, it's not, but it's also a reality that guys can get much better, and guys can learn, and they can learn how to identify defense when they get up to the line of scrimmage, and that can help them. The ability just to walk up there and know what you are playing against, that will do so much for a young player. So we've got 10 games to go here. Drew Lock's played in eight of them. We could be talking about him being a complete bust after these next 10 games, or we could be talking about him being the second coming. Lord knows what it's going to be, and we've seen enough of the bad to think that it could go that direction. We've seen enough of the good to optimistically say that it possibly could go to the good side as well.
That's why I think this game is such a big deal.
And that's not right in the fence, by the way. That's not right in the fence. Like, everybody feels like you have to make a decision on Drew Lock right now. No, you don't. That's what this entire season is built around.
I agree with you. This next four game stretch is going to be a significant part of the story. It's not the whole story, but this next four game stretch should be.
Well, what this next four game stretch is it's going to be hard for him to come out the other. Like, if you don't turn it on now, well, when are you going to turn it on?
Right.
I mean, you can turn it on against the Saints. You can turn it on against the Chiefs again. You can turn it on against the Bills.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, you're not wrong about that. I mean, I'm not going to say that it's all said and done after these next four games.
I'm not either.
The likelihood of him turning it on after these next four games, it should come right now.
All
yeah.
right. You said, hey, I got to wait to pass judgment.
Yeah.
I need the whole season to play out.
Sure.
Well, ultimately, what you're saying is I need to see what the story is. I mean, at the end of the season,
well, what I'm saying is this story is confusing right now. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying the story has looked pretty good at times, and I've wanted to shut it down and not read the last chapter at times, right? So, I mean, which direction is this story going to go? I got to figure that out.
Well, that's why I love the NFL. I love the NFL. I love the NFL season because it is a story. And that's why I always loved covering the Super Bowl because that's, to me, that's the end of the story. You know, one team was able to figure this season out. And there, you know what's fun is that there have been multiple endings to that story. Always the same result, team wins, team loses. But like how you guys won your Super Bowl in 2015, that is a totally different story than, say, the Patriots or the Seahawks or whatever. You know, I've been lucky to go to a bunch of Super Bowls. And it's really interesting, Tyler. Like we've said a million times, there's more than one way to figure out any particular problem.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Probably four or five different solutions that all could do the trick. So what was this? I mean, your story was great in terms of your season, and you were an interesting part of that story because you weren't even there at the beginning.
Right.
They did the first three chapters without you.
That's right, yeah.
And then, you know, obviously we had the ups and downs with Peyton and going out and what Brock did, and then you came back in with Peyton.
That's right. Turned it all around.
Changed everything.
You're welcome.
It was a hell of a story. What's the story so far with Drew Lock this year? It is a little confusing. It's not consistent.
Well, I mean, if you're just talking about this year, this story has been pretty disappointing. I mean, last year he came in his first five games, and you're like, oh, wow, okay. We've been so desperate to just taste success at quarterback that everybody was so excited to anoint this guy. And there were reasons for optimism. This year, we've not had a lot of it. We've had some injuries. We've had some bad football. And, you know, like, what has been the moment this year where the optimism has come? Well, we really haven't had it, if we're being honest.
Not yet, haven't. We really haven't.
But we did have some last year. And so in a guy that's only played eight games, all right, well, we've had plenty of optimism. We've had plenty of reasons for concern.
We had a disappointing loss against Tennessee, who's a good team, but that was a winnable game, and we blew it. For Drew Lock, we had an injury.
You know what game could have been the story? It could have been the optimism was the Patriots, right? And and had his guys caught the ball, we would have been talking about, oh, my gosh.
Right.
Like, it doesn't matter what happened against the Chiefs. Had those guys caught three or four extra touchdowns for him against the Patriots, an absolute blowout. Drew Lock not only was aggressive, but he delivered strikes and they caught touchdowns. We'd be talking about how exciting this guy is, right?
Well, let's not ignore the fact that that could have happened. And that's why after the game we came in and said, hey, listen, I get it. The numbers are just kind of so-so, but heads up. That was a much better game than what you see in on paper.
I mean, Drew put the ball where it needed to be. Those balls could have been touchdowns very easily. And so you got to give him credit for doing his part. The other guys got to do their parts as well.
So again, I see this season and this next four-game chunk as, hey, man, you do need to see those moments. You can have any story has its ups and downs, right?
Yeah.
It's time for some ups.
Yeah.
Okay. And they don't even have to all be wins. Look at Joe Burrow. Everybody loves Joe Burrow. What's their record?
Justin Herbert.
Right. So Burrow's 1-4-1, I think, something like that. Herbert, well, he hasn't been the star for all the games, but the team is 2-4 at this point. Herbert's 1-4, right?
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah, something like that. 1-4 as a starter, and everybody is going gaga about Justin Herbert.
No, you don't have to win games for people to see a baller that's playing quarterback.
Right.
You know, and oftentimes when you're losing games, that's actually when they really show up, because that's when you set them free, and that's when you say, all right, man, we can't run the ball anymore anyways, so we got to be launching the ball all over the place. This is your opportunity to shine. So, you know, a lot of times when you're winning ball games, it's hard to figure out whether that guy's really the guy or not, because everything's just going well.
All right, here is Pat Shurmur. I think Pat Shurmur is, if we're just using the story metaphor, a fascinating part of the story, too, because that is, you were on somewhat of a roll with Scangarello and Locke. You really were.
Yep.
It wasn't a great relationship the whole year with Scangarello and Fangio, obviously. There was some infighting, I know, between, say, Munchak and Scangarello. I get it. But, man, things felt like it was going in the right direction going into the offseason.
Sure.
It certainly didn't feel like, wow, well, there were two things that actually really...
It was the most optimistic part of the season, without a doubt.
We got rhythm. He's fine. Look at that Houston game. They went 4-1. They figured things out. Buzz Lightyear, we're all good. Hey, everything's happening. And then you fire Scangarello. Mm-hmm. Why? Because you just didn't get along?
Well... Scangarello got fired because Vic Fangio never had the opportunity to hire his guy.
Whoa.
That's why he got fired at the end of the day. Now, I'm not saying right, wrong, or indifferent, but that's what happened. Vic Fangio felt like, I never got to choose my offensive coordinator. Things didn't go the way I wanted them to, so I'm going to choose my offensive coordinator, dadgummit.
We spent so much time this summer just going over what the pitfalls of that could be. And almost everyone has turned out so far. But hey, let's turn it around, maybe. Here's what Pat Shurmur said about teaching points for Locke this week.
You always teach the fundamentals of playing the position, and really, it's a mindset. First off, you want to be aggressive, but you want to take what's there. And so when you go back and look at a game, everybody's fond of saying, you know, throw the deep ball. But there's times when they legislate against it and you check the ball down. That happens in all games. And everything's progression driven, you know. And then you go through your progression. It's not there. You check it down. You move on. If you're in the unfortunate situation of being third and long, you know, that you're not always going to be able to throw it past the sticks. So you see oftentimes where now you push up in the pocket and run for it, hit a check down, which requires the route runner to finish the down by gaining some yards. And so I think that's the deal. You know, I think he's still a very young quarterback, and he will be through this full season. I think he's only played in 6 or 7 games. I think people forget that. And so all those things are things that you work on through the length of a long career. And it's certainly what we do with him. So
a lot of coaching going on there. Yeah, I read between the lines, but there's, you know, a lot of coaching going on. I think I do understand what the hesitation was with activating Drew Locke last year. I think I do get it now. They just don't quite trust the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of good guy, works hard, not a bad dude.
Well,
they just don't quite trust him.
Well, that's where they were at last year for sure. And now, I mean, I don't think it mattered last year. It was, you know, it was just as important last year to get Drew Locke reps and figure out whether he could be the guy as it is this year to give him every single rep you possibly can to figure out if he's the guy. He's got to get rid of that stigma, and it's on him now.
Yeah.
It's on Drew Locke to get rid of the bad moments. And, you know, if you just simply get rid of the turnovers, that's going to go a long way, man. So, you know, even if you're not hitting home runs, even if you're not throwing for 3 or 4 touchdowns a game, listen, just don't have the turnovers, and you're going to give this team an opportunity to win games. And that's what's killing us right now is all the turnovers.
I've been confounded for the past couple of years why Drew Locke wasn't a first-round pick and Daniel Jones was. And I had, you know, I'm great with, you know, my own mind with conspiracy theories and all that. Those have kind of passed away. Those are really gone. I actually do think I get it now. There are just moments where it just – you like him, but you don't love him because you can't quite trust him. And you look at a guy like Daniel Jones, and I'm not saying Daniel Jones is a better quarterback, but there's just an element of that dude that is just more trustable for these NFL coaches.
Yeah, I mean, Drew Locke got drafted in the second round because his college film looked very similar to his pro film. His junior year was lighting the world on fire. In his senior year, he had some struggles, and it wasn't the same. The inconsistencies showed up on tape in college as much as they're showing up on tape here in the NFL. And the reason, you know, like the optimistic side of why he got drafted in the second round, you could look at that as a negative, but the optimistic side is because you look at it and you say, well, what if we could coach out all that bad stuff? What if we could get rid of the negative parts of the game? Right. What if we could get him to permanently be just the exciting guy? Well, you got yourself one hell of a first round in the second round.
That is the wild, high risk, high reward concept of Mike Evans' khaki pants strategy.
Well, most khaki pants
high risk, high reward.
Most khaki pants guys don't have that type of ceiling. I mean, most of them are actually the complete opposite. They're like so reliable, but they're not exciting. They're the guys that you know that you can trust them to go in there. They're not going to lose the game for you, but they don't have the arm talent. They don't have the excitement of a Drew Locke.
But when you make that decision, you're giving up on a player at another position who's going to be able to contribute right away at that particular spot. It's just like maybe this guy can work out versus this guy, second rounder, high second rounder, he's going to play. I mean, don't forget, Drew Locke went one spot after Dalton Risner, who I understand Dalton's had a so-so year. But, I mean, does anybody think Dalton Risner won't be a great player in this league for a long time?
No, I mean, I think Dalton's a good player, but, you know, he's going to have to get back to the level he was last year for it to be really exciting
but
again.
Do you sit here and have doubts about that?
No, I mean, he's going to be our left guard.
For hopefully a long time.
Right, right.
You know, it was interesting today. Was it Fangio or Shurmur? It was Shurmur. And he said, the bad news is about Justin Herbert. Oh, I wonder if it's here about Herbert. Let me see if I got that. Maybe not. Let me just tell you. He basically said this. The bad news for the Broncos is, you know, it looks like that Herbert guy is going to be the guy for the next 10 years.
Oh, you see, yeah, he said 10 to 15.
Oh, you heard
that.
He said
the bad news for us is it looks like they found their guy for the next 10 to 15 years.
That's right. He said their guy.
Yeah.
You know what I was thinking? Do you think Drew Lock is our guy? Well, did you notice? And man, I know I'm really reading
between the lines. Fangio's never really given you a reason to feel like he knows that he is our guy. Fangio's given you every reason to think that he's had his doubts from the get-go.
Right. Right. And Shermer certainly had his doubts. He was part of the team that picked, you know, Daniel Jones over Drew Lock.
Yeah.
He had his doubts a long time ago about Drew Lock. I want to see Drew Lock succeed so bad. I want to see on Sunday, Tyler, him set his back foot, throw with confidence, hit the baby throws, and just, you know, get that ball to these playmakers the Broncos have and see him light it up. I want to see that so bad. Because I know the other side to that is starting from scratch again. It's not Brett Rippon. It gets to the point where if Brett Rippon really is a better option, it's like Jamie Moyer's in the starting rotation for the Rockies.
Yeah, you might be looking for a new starting quarterback, but we're going to be looking for a new starting quarterback.
All right. We got some great audio. Maybe one of the funniest pieces of audio you'd ever hear. I'll play that for you coming up next.